on Health Policy and Public Affairs to order. This is March 21, 2007. And before, colleagues, we start on our informational meeting, I want to quickly open a public hearing on Senate Bill 229. And Shannon, do you have anything to say about this bill?
Senate Bill 229 is one that we have heard a couple of different times, and there's been, I think it's the two sides, the board and the professional association, have come to an agreement on an amendment, the dash twos, which should be in your packet.
All right, and I would like to call those from the Board of Psychological Examiners up, please. And is there anyone else here to testify in Senate Bill 229 or about the amendments?
It's not us.
Okay. Please go ahead.
I'm Susan Dale. I'm a board member psychologist with the Board of Psychological Examiners and the chair.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm Karen Berry, and I'm the investigator for the board.
All right. Please just talk about the dash two amendments and tell us about them, and then we'll just go ahead and move the bill if there's no opposition.
Well, it's my understanding that the amendment that the Oregon Psychological Association wanted us to make was that we would order these evaluations with reasonable cause. They wanted that phrase, so that's one of the change that I know about.
All right. Is there any other discussion?
Let's do it.
Okay. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 229, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 229.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 229.
Senator Gurley moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 229. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. And
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 229 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Gurley moves Senate Bill 229 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. And Senator Cruz, do you want to carry this one?
What the heck?
Okay. All right. Thank you, and I'd like to close the work session on Senate Bill 229.
Thank
as
you.
As amended. All right. Okay, so we're open, and I'm just delighted to have the House counterpart. Representative Tomei and I started our political career together, and we've been fighting for causes together, and now we get to serve as chairs together. Awesome. So,
thank you, Representative. Okay, so we're just opening up.
You have to open your meeting.
Okay, open the Health, Human Services, and Women's Wellness Committee on today, March 21st, 2007.
Thank you. We have an informational meeting. I'm so excited that this legislature and bipartisan has so wanted to do some things for the mental health of our beautiful state, and we now have some recommendations regarding the Oregon State Hospital siting, and I will I need to know who's on board to do we have a sign-in sheet, or do I just call Bob Nickel up? And I call Bruce Goldberg up, Dr. Bruce Goldberg.
And Bob Nichols.
And Bob Nichols. All right. And could you just, for the record, give a history of the siting committee and where we're going, and bring us all up to date?
Exactly what we're going to do. Chair Mona Sanderson, Chair Tomei, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Department of Human Services.
And I'm Bob Nickel. I'm Assistant Director to Bruce for the Department of Human Services and responsible for the Addictions and Mental Health Division.
And what we planned to do this morning was exactly what you had in mind, Senator Mona Sanderson, was to, as quickly but as thoroughly as we can, sort of bring the committee up to speed with the plans for constructing new state hospitals, and the sites and the site selection and the criteria. Before I talk about state hospital sites and siting and a state hospital, I think the most important thing to remember is that this really isn't about buildings. This is about people, and this is about creating a system for the care of those in our state with mental illness that does so with high quality, that's comprehensive, and that's able to deliver the right services at the right time in the right places. Building a state hospital is but one piece of that. And it's important to note that this is as much a conversation about those services on the front end in the community to be certain that we provide people the kind of care so that they don't need to come into a hospital, that they get preventive services, they're able to get mental illness treated in their community. So we need to have, and this is a conversation as much about the front end and the community piece as it is about the services that are needed when people need to be in a hospital. And then it's about what we call the back end, the services that are needed so that when people are in the hospital and have been treated successfully, that they can be transitioned back into their community. And so although this morning we're going to talk about a state hospital and buildings, it's really a piece of a larger picture. And I just can't emphasize that enough, that this is about really transforming our entire mental health system and creating a mental health. This is really an opportunity for all of us to create a mental health system that we're proud of and that we have confidence in. And certainly a piece of that is the state hospital. And it's an important piece, and it's been a piece that I think everybody here knows we haven't done anything substantive about in over 50 years. And that this is an opportunity, as I've said, that comes around every 120 years. We built the first state hospital in this state 120 years ago and didn't build a single building as part of it since the mid-1950s. And we have before us an opportunity to bring what are outdated facilities that are unable to provide the kind of services that we need for our patients up to meet modern standards so that we can treat people in a dignified setting. You know, currently our state hospital treats 741 patients about. The bulk of that is in the campus in Salem. There are 60 beds in Pendleton at a state hospital facility there. And we have some beds that we rent as part of what's the Portland campus in a hospital in Portland. But the 60 beds in
68
in Portland and 60 in Pendleton. And then if you can do the math, to subtract that from 741 gets you our total in Salem. And approximately two-thirds of the individuals that are in the state hospital at any one point in time are there as a result of coming in through the criminal justice system. In May of 2005, we had a report done to look at the state hospital facility, and we had contracted with an architectural firm that's noted nationally for their building and development of state hospitals around the country, and they evaluated our current state hospital, and that's what we call now the phase one report. It's in your binder. And they evaluated our current facility and in essence concluded that it wasn't conducive to modern treatment. Not only that, they concluded that to do so would require building a new facility.
they didn't feel that it was cost-effective to renovate, be able to use the existing facility due to a variety of structural issues and others. Their recommendation was that we needed a new facility. Subsequent to that, we had a phase two report, which you also have in your binder, which looked at the state's mental health system and made some recommendations as to what was needed in terms of the front-end services that I had indicated, the back-end services, as well as what we would need for modern psychiatric facilities planning out into the future, looking at our state's demographics, where we are projected to be out into 2020 and 2030, what we could build and what we needed to build on the front end in terms of community services to support that, and what was needed on the back end in terms of community services to support that. The recommendation was that we build two facilities, a 620-bed facility in the North Willamette Valley and a 360-bed facility south of Linn County, and at least two 16-bed facilities east of the Cascades. In the spring of 2006, the governor, then Speaker Minnis, and President Courtney met, reviewed the recommendations, and agreed that we should move forward with a 620 and a 360-bed facility. And the issue that the next issue was where and how we would site such facilities. A committee was formed, a joint committee of the legislature, an interim committee, and Senator Mona Sanderson was a member of that, and seven others, and Senator Courtney, and Senator Gordley was an alternate member of that group, four from the House, four from the Senate. With Lindsey Ball and myself, we met over the summer, took public testimony, with the goal to come up with criteria for how and where we would site these facilities. Those criteria are in your packet. Let me summarize the work of the group. The group took public testimony and tried to give some direction as to how we would consider where to place these facilities. There were first some clear, what were considered pass-fail criteria. A plot of land had to be large enough to accommodate the buildings of this size, and they needed to be in the right geographic locale. And then after that, there were a series of both technical considerations. And those technical considerations were that the land wasn't in a floodplain, we were able to get the appropriate services in, sewer, electrical lines, that there were, that it was technically feasible, and there were about 10-12 criteria. Zoning issues, a variety of what were considered technical criteria that needed to be considered. There were also then a series of programmatic criteria. Those programmatic criteria were that the hospital be located near patients and their families, that we be able to locate a facility where we could recruit and retain trained professional staff. Psychiatrists, psychiatric nurses, other mental health professionals, that we be able to locate a facility in a locale where
our patients could get their medical needs met as well, and one in which had the kinds of community supports and community acceptance that was needed to be certain that we placed a facility in a community that wanted a facility, and that where our patients and our facility could become part of a community. We agreed on those criteria and actually weighted the programmatic criteria higher than the technical criteria. And then the Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Human Services were instructed to go forth, solicit land, and rank the sites and come up with some recommendations. And you have those recommendations before you today. The Department of Administrative Services solicited, looked at all state lands that were available, as well as solicited what they call hot sheets. They solicited land from brokers and individuals who had parcels of land that met the appropriate size and geographic locale. In the end, they had 13 sites that met the initial pass-fail criteria. And you have those along with the scoring. In the front piece of your binder, it's actually on page 13. This is page 13 of 24 in the front piece. I'll just give everybody a moment to get there.
Are there any other binders, Madam Chair?
Representative Greenlick, you can.
I'm okay with the President Clinton. Okay.
We'll be certain you get one.
Thank you.
Until Representative Olson comes, why don't we send one?
Well, he's got one there.
You're sharing now.
Okay.
So 13 sites were evaluated based on the criteria. The Department of Administrative Services, who has the technical expertise around the land and the technical issues, evaluated the technical parts of this. And the Department of Human Services, Bob Nickel and his staff, who have the expertise on the programmatic side, evaluated the programmatic criteria. The sites and their scoring are listed for you. And as we've said throughout this whole process, we had 13 good sites, and we needed to choose two. What I'd like to do now, if I could, is walk you through the top two sites in each locale, because that's what we... The report then goes on to talk about the top two sites in each locale and the advantages and challenges that each presented, and then our recommendations for the two sites. Let me preface by saying that when some of the key issues that we certainly looked at were, number one, to be able to build facilities where we had the opportunity to recruit and retain staff. This, I think, as everybody on these committees knows, because you've been involved in health and human services issues, we face shortages in nursing staff throughout the state, not just around state psychiatric facilities, that we have a number of workforce challenges that face us in the future. And we wanted to assure that we could put sites in places where we could recruit and retain the appropriate professional staff. That was key. It was also key that we placed facilities where they were close to patients and families. Thirdly, it was important that we do this in a manner that was cost-effective and that brought value to what we were proposing. And I think you'll see that in the evaluations as well as I talk through the sites. When we looked at the Salem site, the sites in the north, it came down to the two top sites were two sites in Salem. One, the current state hospital grounds, and the other, a piece of land, a correctional land out on Turner Road at Deer Park in Salem, just outside of town. Looking at those two sites, certainly the current state hospital also presented us with the need to do some additional evaluation in terms of issues around how we would continue to operate a facility and build at the same time, issues around how we would be able to, what we would do with the current buildings, and issues around some of the environmental issues around our current structure, as well as some of the unique historical issues that the current facility presents. There's a lot of interest in restoring and maintaining some of the historic pieces of the old hospital, and I think a very important opportunity to be able to create an appropriate memorial for those individuals who lived and died at the hospital and whose remains still remain at the state facility, and an ability to create the appropriate memorial for those individuals. Those were some things that we took time and paid some special attention to, got some outside assistance from a contractor to look at many of those issues. The current facility presents what we believe a unique opportunity, the current state hospital grounds, to be able to build a facility on the current grounds. The site would be on the south side of Center Street. Most of our patients currently reside on the north side of Center Street. There would be some logistical challenges in terms of operating some of the food services, and we use a number of tunnels under the street, and our ability to do some of that would be compromised as we constructed a new hospital on the other side of the street. The costs of those have been taken into consideration, and you'll see that in the costing pieces here.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Did you want to go through their presentation first and then take questions? Or?
No. We've devoted the next three meetings to this.
Great.
Yeah.
What would be very helpful to me as you're going through the results of the site evaluations, and as we're focused on Salem, the Salem site, if you would talk about concerns that have been raised about our ability to attract and effectively recruit professional staff to Salem. There has been a history of difficulty recruiting to Salem. And so what will be the strategies that we employ that will lead to successful recruitment? How are we looking at that piece?
Senator Gordley and Chairs Mona Sanderson and Tomei, let me talk a little bit and then have Bob also provide you some info. I think that's a critical issue. And I think that's a critical issue wherever we site a facility. Mm-hmm. And we have already been, before choosing the sites, we've, because of our history of needing to do a better job at recruitment and retention and looking at some of the challenges in the future, have put together a number of strategies. We, several months ago, began to have a joint agreement with Oregon Health Sciences University
to recruit and retain psychiatrists. That's been extremely successful. We've been able to already recruit one new physician to the hospital, and we hope that this relationship with OHSU will be able to provide us with additional psychiatrists. We've formed a work group and a committee to look at some of the nursing issues, and I'm going to let Bob talk to you about that as well. But I believe that these are certainly challenges, but not challenges that we can't overcome. Through our ability to partner with resources in the state, through our ability to start now and plan for the future with innovative programs, as Bob will talk about, as well as, I think, most importantly, an ability to grow our own out into the future. And that's, I think, key, and you'll hear me talk about that as we look at some of these sites, but our partnerships with facilities that train mental health workers and our ability to enhance their training programs to do things such as create a forensic psychiatric fellowship program where we can train forensically trained psychiatrists, train them at our facilities, promotes to me some of the greatest promise. What I know from my previous life in academic medicine is that the number one predictor of where a future physician spends the vast majority of the rest of their career is where they do their residency training. And so if we can train physicians here, I think we have a great chance at retaining them. Let me have Bob give you a few more details, because I think this is a critical issue, and we need to be investing in this, working on this from now through the future.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, actually about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we began something called the...
For the record.
Oh, I'm sorry, again, Bob Nickel, Assistant Director, DHS, and in charge of Addictions and Mental Health Division. About 3 years ago, we started something called the Behavioral Workforce Development Initiative. We began discussions about curricula, properly training professionals with private and public training programs, including community colleges in this state. That is an ongoing effort. I think that's critical that we keep those kind of deep background improvements going, because not only do we want to and need to hire staff, we need them to be trained properly in evidence-based practices, recovery, trauma-informed care, cultural competency, all of the things that we have as values. We need to make sure that those are the values that get trained into people before we even get them. So it's important to note that we've actually been involved with this issue for a while. And this is not going to be a problem potentially just in the state hospitals or, frankly, as I appreciate the Senate President saying, we should really start talking about these as mental health facilities and begin to get some of the stigma out of the work that we're doing and out of the experiences that people have. But we need to really address this issue in the community settings as well, because people, for the most part, as you, this is a well-educated committee, I know we serve about 72,000 adults in an average fiscal year, and only about 1,500 of them end up in the state hospital. So we're talking about, in the state hospital system, 2% of the people who actually go there. So it's really critical that we think about this whole workforce development issue systematically. Just as a point of perspective, every state in the country that I'm able to talk to, and twice a year I go and meet with my colleagues, the other state mental health and addiction commissioners, is struggling with this issue. This is not unique to Oregon, and it's not specific to us building a new hospital, but we do need to deal with it. The state of Nevada has a 40% vacancy rate in their nurses in their state hospitals, for example. California has similar percentages of vacancies as we have, 20% in nurses. So these are issues nationwide, that there is a shortage of nurses, and that's one of the reasons, as Dr. Goldberg mentioned, we initiated the Psychiatric Nurse Workforce Development Team about 6 months ago. As I testified yesterday in one of the committees, we will be issuing a report on that, I hope, around the 1st of May, and it will provide a comprehensive look at the kind of things that we need to start doing now if we're going to meet these kind of behavioral workforce development needs in the new mental health facilities.
Mr. Nickel, we have Western that has a nursing program. I don't know if they have a psychology program. We have Linfield. We have University of Oregon, only an hour away. Have we done anything to coordinate with all of the private as well as the public hospitals, I mean universities and community colleges? We have Chemeketa, and then of course Lane, to start focusing on curriculums there, because this is a workforce issue and we need to start working on developing, and if we need to mandate it from the legislature, I'm all for that, and trying to get a truly comprehensive training program for the nurses as well as the psychologists.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, the Psychiatric Nurse Force Workforce Development Team includes OHSU School of Nursing, and includes University of Portland School of Nursing. It includes Chemeketa Community College. Several of the other community colleges with nursing programs have been invited and have been involved. We're inviting the Oregon Nursing Oregon Nurses Center, the Oregon Nurse Association, the Board of Nurses. We have done a comprehensive invitation list, and we've had very strong participation. I have to tell you, this is one of the liveliest groups that we've formed, and they're very motivated to work with us. I'd also like to add that in the governor's recommended budget, I don't have all of the details, but there is additional funding proposed to increase the number of nursing training slots. Yeah, because we really can't get ahead of this problem unless we think back clear to the issue of nursing instructors. People are not going into nursing instructing, partly because they take salary decreases a lot of times to go into teaching. So there's a whole range of issues that this report is going to lay out. We also need to look at the opportunities this presents. I think there are tremendous opportunities to reach out to communities of color, for example, and encourage young people coming up who might not otherwise consider a nursing career. It's a living wage career to go into, and the opportunities are great here if we work with this in a careful way.
I think Bob hit the key word there, opportunity. I think that to be able to envision all of us once again how we create a new mental health delivery system for this state and create an exciting opportunity that people want to be a part of and want to participate in. And create that kind of a climate to build new facilities and to have this be something that everybody in this state wants to be a part of, I think can be a real opportunity for us in all this. I also think it's not something that we're just going to talk about now. I think this is something we're going to be talking about for the next 10 and 15 years. We're beginning that now. And we don't deal with recruitment and retention of staff in 6 months and then you're done with it. This is really an ongoing issue that we're going to be facing.
Yes, Senator
Cruz. Back on the hospital side for a moment. And thank you. I noticed both for the northern facility and the southern facility, and I know estimates are just estimates, but in both cases, your first choice is more expensive than your second choice. And I'm also wondering, in relation to the Center Street site, if anything was done to factor in the potential gain of sale of property, because it could be viable commercial property if there wasn't a hospital there, at least portions of it. And I would also like to know is there, would there be potentially capacity on the Center Street site to build, because one of the recommendations early on was to build one hospital, and is there capacity there for that sort of facility? Several questions there.
Senator Cruz, Chairs Mona Sanderson and Tomei, I think you've raised some key issues, and let me launch into all of them. In terms of the cost issue, these are estimates.
Right.
Two, that indeed the number one sites were more costly. They were close in cost, and not to nitpick on words. Certainly, there's a difference in price. I will say that the cost for the site at the current campus also includes approximately $4 million for the reconstruction and refurbishing of the part of the old building and a creation of a memorial. And actually, when we then figure that in, the costs are almost identical. And cost was one factor among several. Wasn't the key factor. The costs were close enough that some of the other factors swayed our decisions and recommendations. The primary one, and then I'll get to the other issues, was that there are a couple of issues around the two different properties in Salem. One is that the current site is on public transportation, and the other site is outside of town. And one of the big issues for our patients is their ability to begin to transition into a community, to be able to integrate, take public transportation, and to have such things as libraries and outings more accessible. That was an advantage of the current site over the one outside of town. The one outside of town also presented some logistical issues around the fact that the Department of Corrections has a shooting range out there, that putting the site out there would require that to be moved and would certainly create some logistical problems and some expense for the Department of Corrections, which also wasn't figured in here. Likewise, what we could recoup in selling property that was not figured into this. And I think that those are discussions that need to take place further down the road. I think you hit on one other issue, which I was going to get to, but let me address now, which is one site versus two. Because I think it gets at what we've talked about in terms of recruitment and retention and a number of other issues. I think your question was, why are we building a 620 and a 360-bed facility when we could build one 980-bed facility? And the answer is multifactorial. Number one, recruitment and retention. I believe that we maximize our ability to recruit and retain professional staff if we diversify our locations. To be able to recruit workforce out of solely one community is not as good as being able to have two communities that offer different opportunities. For example, we have a facility in Salem where there are opportunities for families who want to have careers in government and at Willamette University and other places in Salem. So two career families could have certain opportunities here, whereas another community such as Junction City also offers opportunities that don't exist here in Salem through University of Oregon and through some of the opportunities that exist in Eugene. So I think we really maximize our ability to recruit by diversifying that into two communities. Secondly, I think there's an issue of economy of scale. And there isn't an advantage in one 980-bed facility versus a 620 and a 360. When we've talked to our consultants, the economy of scale issue really comes into place once you reach about 300 beds. Having two 160-bed facilities is not as efficient as running one 300-bed facility. Once you get above 300, 350 beds, you don't really gain much in economy of scale. Number three, there are some unique programmatic advantages that one can have by having two campuses. And lastly, I think that there's a movement as we look at how we build facilities of healing to not create single large facilities and to be able to have two which offer some greater advantages. So I think there's a lot of reasons to have two facilities. I think, Senator, then you're getting at the probably the third issue, which is perhaps embedded in your question, which I was going to get to, so let me get to right now, which was the proximity or apparent proximity of the two facilities. And if you go to your binder and go to tab 8, you'll see a map. And I don't know, Bob, do you have anything you want to add to that before we get to the...
No, I think I covered the issues.
If you get to tab 8...
Tab 8, Alpha.
Eight, the number 8.
Way in the rear.
Way in the back. All the way. Ooh,
it's also the map that we got handed out.
Yeah.
It's also a handout.
Oh,
it's at our desk.
No, because it's a key issue. So you have a map in front of you.
Oh,
and yes, right here. It should look familiar. It's a map of Oregon, and the what this is we looked at our 2006 average daily census in the hospital. This is actual census numbers in our current state hospital, and we looked at the communities from which our patients came. And you can see the percentages. 68% of our population was from Lincoln, Benton, Lynn, Jefferson County on north. 14% was from the Lane, Deschutes, Crook area, the vast majority of those from Lane County and from Eugene. And then just under 15% from Douglas, Coos on down. We want to have facilities near the communities where our patients live. And by having a facility in Salem will, and one in Junction City, which is just south of Linn County, will put two facilities within very close proximity to the geography of over 80% of our patients. And the other issue is that the Salem facility will probably be unable to accommodate anybody from the northern part of the state, and we will rely on the smaller facility to take some of those admissions as well. So by those two locales, knowing that 80% of our patient population, quite frankly, is primarily from Salem, Portland, and the Eugene area, we believe that the geographic locales really provide the appropriate mix.
Dr. Goldberg, Representative Gelser has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Goldberg. Thank you, Dr. Nickel. I had two questions about the citing in Junction City, and I'll just ask them both at the same time. One was that you had spoken earlier about changing language from hospital to facility to work on destigmatizing and working on the healing model. I was wondering what you thought if there was any discussion about the message of having a state hospital share a site with a state prison. It's listed in here that there would eventually be a prison also on the site of the Junction City. And then I was also wondering a little bit about proximity to community services for those individuals in that facility in Junction City. I know that it's close to Eugene, but having gone through Junction City many, many times, I don't recall seeing public transportation that would carry individuals from Junction City to Eugene, and wondered, would that be a county transit district? Is the city of Eugene willing to pay for bringing that public transportation out for community members to be able to get to jobs and recreation and those kinds of activities to move towards independence?
Let me talk about first the issue you raised about the correctional site. We've had a lot of discussions about that, and indeed are very sensitive to the fact that we send a lot of messages in the language that we use, how we talk about things, where we locate facilities, etc. That certainly is one of the challenges of the Junction City site, is we certainly in no way want to equate a correctional facility with a mental health facility and a facility of healing. And sharing the site means that we will need to take particular effort to be certain that there are two unique and separate identities that are treated. Right now, they're lumped together because we're talking about a shared parcel of land that is coming from the correctional department. But we believe that by the appropriate design and architecture through the use of the kinds of barriers, geographic environmental ways of being able to separate properties and developments, that we can create very unique and separate identities that are appropriate. Is that going to be a challenge? Absolutely. Is it something that we're sensitive to? Very, very, very much so. But I do think it's something that we can, if we all work on, overcome. Again, each of these sites, as I had indicated, there's 13 good sites, and they each have their pluses and their challenges. That's certainly one of the ones around Junction City, as well as you indicated the issue of transportation. Most of the other sites that we looked at in the southern part of the state shared some of those same challenges around where they were located, being near public transportation, and that's something that we're going to need to work around. We haven't had discussions with the city of Eugene yet about extending transportation out that way. We need the sort of go-ahead to be able to site and build these facilities, and I think those are the kinds of conversations that we need to have and we need to plan for.
Can I do a brief follow-up? So I noted that one of the benefits to the Junction City site was that politically the community wanted to see the facility there and was welcoming of these folks into their community. What conversations were had with the Chambers of Commerce of Junction City? Are there job opportunities, employment opportunities, entertainment opportunities? Junction City, and I recognize the transportation issue, but if this is part of that larger community-based model where we're helping people heal and move out to live independently, I'm having a hard time fitting my experience with Junction City, which is a great town, with employment opportunities, entertainment opportunities for 320 people.
Madam Co-Chairs and Representative Gelser, we're starting our conversations now with the city of Junction City. In fact, I just met the city manager. He's here in the Capitol today. He may be in the room for all I know. I haven't looked around to see if he's still here. He was here earlier. And those are the kind of conversations we're going to be having. He wants to meet a number of legislators, if he can, today from the area. They are, you know, our initial contacts have been very welcoming. These are the very kinds of issues we'll be talking about over with the city, and I'm confident, given their outreach to us so far, that we're going to be able to find a lot of common ground. But these are the kind of issues we need to work through. And if I could just add a word about the architecture, I think most of us still are back in a mindset where state hospitals look something like prisons. And if you look at the beginning architectural designs that we've gotten from KMD, they don't look anything like prisons. In fact, they've told us, do not build anything higher than a two-story kind of structure. They'll be developed in pods. Security is going to be much more disguised using the buildings themselves. And so I think as we think about those issues, which I think are very legitimate that have been raised, about how we make sure that this doesn't look like an annex to the prison, those are the kind of things we really can and will work with.
Senator Gordley, and then Senator Courtney.
Thank you. I wanted to follow up to Representative Gelser's question about the community of Junction City. And I want to say this. We need to make sure that the community is a welcoming community. We have some serious challenges in Oregon around racism, around embracing diversity, cultural diversity. And so as we look at what is that community currently, let's be very clear about what may be some barriers to attracting and again retaining people to come into a community that may have some challenges. I don't know what that looks like, but I sure hope someone's asking those questions, because we have a history in Oregon. We do have a history in Oregon that isn't always hospitable and isn't always welcoming to people who are new and different.
David Klein, who's the administrator from Junction City, is here. Would he please come up, since these questions are relevant to your site?
As he comes up, just a couple of comments. Senator Gordley, I'm aware of the history and am sensitive and totally understand that we need to have facilities in communities that want them for the right reasons, that are accepting, and that create the kinds of opportunities for our patients and our staffs. And that's key in how we approach this. The Junction City community, and it's great that Mr. Klein is here and can talk a whole lot more knowledgeably than I can, but the one issue that I would want to just touch on briefly, and it was one of the issues that made Junction City an attractive site, and I'm sure that Mr. Klein will give you a whole lot more, is its proximity to the University of Oregon and the other academic institutions in the area. And particularly, this gets at the workforce issue. We've been, as I indicated, working very closely with OHSU School of Medicine to create shared relationships to recruit and retain psychiatrists. OHSU is seeking to build a new campus in the Eugene area and to extend its training programs to that part of the state. We believe, and we've been working closely with them, that that's a great opportunity for us to be able to, as I discussed, grow our own, to have a school of medicine in close proximity, to be able to create training programs in our communities where we can grow our own. So that was a factor, and I think that, you know, it's not just the city limits of Junction City, it's the greater community.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, excuse me. My name is David Klein. I'm the city administrator for Junction City, and I've held the position for about 6 months, so I can't speak with a great deal of experience about the community. I can say that we are at least one of 13,000 communities that now have a Starbucks, so we feel like we're really Let me just tell you, we didn't have a lot of time to put together an information packet for the project, but I think we did a fairly decent job with about the 5 days to week that we had. We were able to provide, and I can make copies of this available to anybody, we were able to get written letters of support from Peace Health, from Lane Metro Partnership, the University of Oregon, oral commitment, oral support from OSU, letters from the mayors of both Eugene and Springfield, from our chamber, and from the electric co-op that would be serving the facility, as well as Representative Chris Edwards. We are served by Lane Transit District, LTD. They currently have two different routes through the city. What their expansion plans are, I don't know. I'm sure that what happens to the site will certainly make a difference, but we do have access to mass transit at this point through Lane County. We are an increasingly diverse community. Our Hispanic population is growing rather significantly from the numbers that we're receiving through the school district. We are doing as much as we can to address bilingual issues through our city services, particularly at our library. So we are cognizant of issues. We obviously, we're not a very diverse community at this point, but I think we're becoming increasingly so, and certainly are aware of those issues. We anticipate a wealth of new businesses that would locate in this area. We're opening up about a 1 to 2 mile development corridor by the location of both the prison and the hospital at the site that you've selected. That's within our urban growth boundary. It's land that is now available to support the facility to provide the kinds of services that will be in demand when the facilities build. We're having conversations now with the prison. And one of the opportunities, and I understand the stigma that might attach to the co-location of the facilities, I would suggest that there is also an opportunity, certainly an opportunity to reduce your costs, which I think was of concern, through the sharing of infrastructure. Rather than having two separate locations with two sets of infrastructure, you're able to make joint use of infrastructure at that location. The city also has worked carefully with developers in the past to find ways to obtain reimbursement for investment in infrastructure through what we call zones of benefit. So there's a real opportunity for you to recover much of that cost, and I don't think that's built into your current budget. We'll be initiating conversations like that as soon as the legislature has done its business. So at this point, I think certainly our city council and our mayor has been active as well in supporting the project, and we've gotten a letter to you. We've provided you the detail of the planning issues that would be involved, being within the urban growth boundary, having complementary zoning, so you have no real zoning issues. It's a use, an allowable use within our zoning. Our major hurdles, certainly the alternative site, you were talking about 3 years worth of land use issues. You won't face those injunctions. City.
That's
just a nutshell. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Courtney.
Yes. The administrator actually started down the path I need to go in this discussion. We know that when we started on this journey that a certain percentage of individuals that are in our correctional facilities are there because they're mentally ill. There are serious mental illness. The percentages vary. I've heard anywhere from 18% to as high as 30%. So we asked the Department of Correction officials to be a part of this march from day one, before phase one even came out, Max Williams. And at one time, we thought about creating a single facility that actually was a Department of Correction facility / mental health facility. And we backed away from that, in part because of stereotypes and some of the discussions we've been having here. But if you go back, and I can't find it here, it's either phase one or phase two. In both these facilities, specifically in the 620-bed facility, we are going to reserve, or however you want to call it, allocate anywhere from 20 to 40 beds for Department of Corrections, so that individuals who are in the Department of Corrections, they've committed crimes, they have been found guilty, not except for insanity, but they're under their jurisdiction, can come over and be in these mental health facilities to receive the kind of treatment that's necessary if we're going to make sure that when they leave our state prisons, they don't reoffend again. So while we have had a lot of discussion on Junction City about stereotypes and things, in some ways there will be a need for this mental health facilities. If we're going to deal realistic with our society, to recognize that there has to be some relationships with the Department of Corrections and the mental health facilities. So, and I believe also in this second facility, 320-bed, were we also going to put some beds there, or are the beds going to be exclusively in the 620-bed facility?
Madam Co-Chair, Senate President Courtney, I anticipate that we'll have some of the correction beds in the Eugene area facility, partly for the reasons you're bringing up, because if there is the prison facility built there, it would be a natural kind of thing to have that. We'll certainly have that capability up here in Salem, but we're looking at that possibility as well for that second set of 20 that you alluded to.
So the only thing I want to say this, Madam Chair, is that we have this interesting predicament. We want to get rid of the stereotypes. This is not an incarceration out here. But on the other hand, we know what's going on in the Department of Corrections in terms of the number of men and women there that have serious mental health issues. And this is one of our ways to try to help treat these individuals. So it's sort of back and forth, and I want to bring that up. And I thought the administrator started to speak to it when he talks about sharing certain facilities or programs in the facilities. Maybe you get some of that advantage, and I don't know what we're going to do with corrections down there, some of that advantage in Junction City, but even here in Salem, which just has several prisons here with all due respect, there is this thing everyone here should know, that there will be beds in the new mental health facilities which will be allocated and dedicated to individuals who are in these correctional facilities, so we can treat them and hopefully heal them, a phrase you're now using, so that they, when they leave, will be able to lead a life and not reoffend. Thank you, Chair.
One other just additional piece on Senator Courtney's is, one, I think that the ability to share infrastructure was specifically geared at the sewer, electrical. We haven't, that there's an opportunity to actually decrease the costs in terms of our ability to share with corrections some of that infrastructure cost, as well as with the city that is coming forward with that. There's also a greater issue around the shared responsibility between corrections and the Department of Human Services, and that also gets at the issues of recruiting and retaining professional staff. And we've already begun conversations with the Department of Corrections, so that I know that Max Williams and myself and Bob Nickel want to assure that every individual in this state, no matter where they are, gets high quality, appropriate treatment. And that means that given the numbers of individuals that are in the correctional facilities who have mental illness, that we have to work together so we don't compete in our recruitment of staff, that we work together to develop the kinds of plans that we're talking about to be able to assure that Max has the appropriate workforce in the Department of Corrections as well. So we are linked, and we have to be cognizant of both the reasons that we need to work together and the issues around stigma.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, let me do this real quick, which is to, because I think a lot of the questions have come up, which I think are appropriate. Two things. I wanted to just quickly go through each of the sites sort of that we've landed on. But before I do that, what I didn't say at the beginning, which is probably an opportune time to say now, is that our intent is that this is a great opportunity for the state, and we want to be certain that we go forward jointly, and that the information that we've put together, that you have it all, that we want the legislature to feel comfortable and support the recommendations that we've come forward with. In the end, our interest is to be certain that we leave this legislative session with the appropriate plans and funding so that we can move forward in building the facilities that this state needs. Where they are, We've come forward with our recommendation. We're happy to engage in a conversation. And if you think there's a better site, let's have that discussion. I think we've chosen two great sites. I hope that you support that. But I also hope and think that you'll ask us the kinds of questions that you need to feel comfortable with that. Having said that, the site at the current facility, I think, presents an opportunity to, A, the site's already zoned. It's already in a community that accepts our patients and wants them there. We have a great opportunity to continue to retain our current workforce. We have an ability to enhance our recruitment there. We have an ability to create the appropriate memorial to the past as we also build a new future. I believe that the logistical issues around building at the current site have been appropriately planned for and costed out, and that we can work through that, and that in the end we have a facility that's in a location and that presents the best opportunities, I think, for us as a state. When we looked at the four properties that we had to choose from, the two in Portland, there was not community support, and there was not there were a number of zoning issues that would need to be dealt with, which would put this project out to we don't know when. So we think we've landed on an option that we can move forward on with the rapidity that also we need to. We need to move forward very quickly in terms of getting the current patients that we serve into facilities that we all can be proud of. And then I'll give you my 2 seconds about the southern site after Representative Greenlick's question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you just talk a little bit about the lack of community support in Washington County? To the tax issue?
Chair Greenlick and co-chairs, I know that there wasn't the same degree of support. I don't know whether it was the root of that, whether it's a tax issue or what, but certainly there wasn't a community that embraced the facility in the same way that it's been embraced here in Salem.
Madam Chair, if I can follow up this moment, maybe I can ask.
Karen may know.
Mr. Corn, was the lack of property tax not a problem in Junction City?
Co-chairs, representative, I'm not sure I understand.
I'm not sure
I understand the question.
I assume this land will not bring property tax to the local community. Is that?
That's correct.
That you didn't see that as a problem.
Did not see that as a problem. We view the development potential as consistent with our master planning. We look at the whole development corridor, the ability for ancillary services to come in to develop more tax base, more jobs. It's we view it as a real economic development plus for the community.
Colleagues, I want to point out, having been on the Planning Commission for 7 years and city government as mayor for several years beyond that, when we talk about zoning, I know how important that issue is and how long that can take, especially for a facility such as this. And
that was a key issue in the Junction City area, where the site is within the urban growth boundary.
Right.
And the sites in the second site in the southern part of the state is not in the urban growth boundary, which then presents some real issues about our ability to be able to get the appropriate approvals to be able to move forward. Not saying that's impossible, but once again, these are the issues that we raised and looked at.
And having been in the legislature for 6 years and on the health committee for all of those years, and hearing about the crisis in the state hospital and visiting that, I think anybody who has visited is aware that we need to get those people out as quickly as possible. So it seems to me that those two factors certainly support the choices that I think this group has made. And I know that Representative Maurer has a question.
Go ahead. I wasn't quite finished, if I might. ask. I mean, it seems to me when you look at where the population comes from, it comes from the metro area. And we who drive it every day might not think Salem is very far from Portland, but for people in Portland it is. So I was just looking at a little more understanding as to why the Washington County sites were so quickly, why they rank so low in the criteria.
Madam Chair, Representative Grinlick, I'm Karen Brazeau. I'm the state hospital replacement specialist for the department. And I can tell you that in looking at the Hillsborough sites, one of the reasons they ranked low is they were extremely expensive to purchase, almost prohibitively so. The community's lack of interest, if you will, was was verbalized as it being those the sites being an inappropriate, in their view, inappropriate place for a hospital like this, that it's near an area that I think they hope to develop real estate in for a different reason. What was not said was the tax base, which certainly could be an issue. Also, when we evaluated those sites, knowing that the bulk of the population at the state hospital does come from that area, we were looked at the transportation issues, and that though the sites may be closer to Portland, in accessibility, drivability is certainly equally as daunting as driving from the Portland area to the Salem area. They're just not really easy to get to. If you live up in that area and drive around, you have an idea of how difficult it is to get out there to those sites in the Hillsborough area.
I do want to follow up.
Madam Chair, I'm going to wait until Dr. Goldberg talks about the southern side.
All right. And my question might need to wait till after that too. But if you cut off your percentages, I know you include Deschutes and Crook. I'm not sure how many are patients come from Deschutes and Crook. But we have two facilities that we're going to build east, and I know one of them will have to be in Deschutes County. I just assume that it would be, and probably one maybe in eastern Oregon. But now I'm looking at, with 14.9%, 16-bed facilities. I mean, are we looking at taking care of the Ashland-Medford area also? Because I feel there's a definite need there also.
Chair Monis Anderson, Chair Tomei, couple of issues there. One is, I don't know if on the back of your graph you also have the numbers, but you can actually see that for Crook County, 0.3% of the patients in the hospital were from there. For Deschutes County, it was 1.89%. And for Lane County, it was 11.99 or 12%. So when you really looked at those three counties, you can see that over 80% of that county came from those three counties is from Lane County. The vast majority, over 80% from Lane County and primarily from Eugene. Secondly, the issue about 16-bed facilities. Started out this by talking about the fact that when we talk about these two large facilities, those are two of many things that we need in our communities. We need front-end services and people to have access to mental health care. We also need 16-bed facilities. This isn't a question of either or. And we are looking every day, and Mr. Nickel will talk to that, for communities and places to develop additional 16-bed facilities around the state. So certainly meeting the needs of communities is part of having 16-bed smaller facilities throughout the state. Thirdly, I just wanted to point out that because this will probably come up as well, that the conversation today is really focusing on these two large facilities. We have a separate process going on right now for east of the Cascades to look at the unique needs of our communities in central and eastern Oregon and looking at those issues. And that's really separate from where we put these two facilities. We also have a separate group that's been working on the front end, the community-based services that we need as well. So I think all these pieces do come together, and that there are opportunities for communities to have 16-bed facilities. Bob, would you like to add to that?
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, yes. One of the other reports that we're going to be seeing before too long is Central Oregon's report. They did a very well-crafted needs assessment, for example, of what they would like to see. They tend to want to see less than 16-bed facilities because they anticipate that they could do a better, more individualized job with 5 and 10-bed facilities. So we're working with the communities to craft what their citizens in the next 10 to 15 to 20 years are actually going to need. We got a little bit of federal funding, and we did we're doing a series actually of community resource development workshops. So there's one in Medford and there's one in Bend, and we've done one in this area because there is a lot of interest out there in different quarters among people who are entrepreneurial and who have experience in the ability to run these kind of programs and developing a lot more community resources.
Representative Cowan?
Thank you for getting to part of my question, which was I was looking at this huge geographical area on the eastern side, and I understand we need to make these other decisions, but I just need to know where it fits in. But as I look at the percentages, I guess I need to figure out if this is a typo or not, because we have a 10.2% of the population in Baker County.
I looked at that, too, and I was thinking, oh, my land. That's more than Jackson and Douglas combined.
We'll check on that.
If it's not a typo, then I definitely have several more questions.
Well, let's do this. We will check on that. That would be just under Marion County. And
thank you.
We'll get the appropriate number.
I appreciate it.
So somehow that doesn't.
I don't think that could possibly be right.
I've been there. They're nice people.
I'm so chairs off. We're appropriately chagrined.
Were you through there, Representative Cowan?
I think so. I just was really, truly reviewing the eastern side of the state and trying to figure out what we were doing in terms of the planning process.
Yeah.
And so my bigger question was around that, not simply on one particular number, but as we develop the discussion, I'm interested in knowing more about the various facility efforts in throughout the state too.
Again, this isn't just about where we put two facilities.
Right.
It's about the front end, the back end, the eastern and central parts of the state, and how we put all these pieces together. When we talk about the southern sites for a moment?
Yes. Was that your question, Representative Maurer?
Yeah. Or I will let him talk, and then I'll ask my question.
All right.
First, let me start by saying I am looking for the appropriate term to talk about the geographic location of the 360-bed facility. It has come up in discussions with several people that Junction City, with all due respect to everybody in Junction City, isn't Southern Oregon. So it's not a Southern site. And I appreciate that. And so part, as we talked about how we talk about issues around stigma and all that, we also need to be careful about how we talk about geographic terms. I understand that it's not a Southern Oregon and that there are unique issues in Southern Oregon. We do think Junction City has a number of positive features for the 360-bed facility. One is the land is owned by the state, and so there's certainly an economic advantage there. It's within the urban growth boundary, as I indicated, which really presents us the opportunity to be able to move forward more quickly than in other areas. There is a lot of strong local support. The partnerships with the local universities and our ability to recruit and retain in that area, not that it wouldn't be, we couldn't recruit and retain in other areas. We just felt that with the Oregon Health Sciences University moving its campus there, it created some really great opportunities for us as a site. The second site was the Coker Butte site in Medford. It certainly had some positive advantages in terms of the technical aspects of the site. The community of Medford certainly offers a lot of the same issues in terms of the ability to recruit and retain staff. In the end, it didn't score as highly. There are some urban growth boundary challenges. It's outside of the urban growth boundary, which doesn't allow us the same degree of assuredness that we'd be able to move forward with this project. And there were some issues about public transportation, which existed in around the Medford site, as well as the geographic issue that I raised earlier. As I think you saw from the map, a site in Junction City and a site in Salem put the two facilities in closer proximity to more people than a site in Salem and a site in Medford. Again, as we've been saying, there are 13 good sites. And this is, you know, not about there being two good sites and 11 bad sites. We have 13 good sites. We think the two we've chosen really present us with great opportunities. That's not saying there aren't others that don't. Both those sites in the southern part of the state offered some opportunities and challenges.
President Maurer?
No, Chairs, thank you. I got two lines of questioning. First off, I want to say that I've been supportive of the site selection, at least in a larger context, and not trying to politicize, not picking Josephine or Jackson County, which is all fine because I think the rationale is there. But I have a question now because of that Junction City decision, that it changes the dynamic in geography and distance about the two 16-bed facilities, which you somewhat addressed, and that I think now you need that seriously consider a Southern Oregon facility might be, in that mix now just because of looking at the population distributions.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Maurer, I agree that will affect how we look at the Southern Oregon sites in terms of 16-bed facilities. What it will also mean is that the community will hopefully work with us around the siting of these because they're likely to be at least half forensic facilities, which means that the community concerns rise a lot when we start talking about people who have committed crimes and have pled guilty except for insanity. We found some ability to work with mixed-use facilities, but some of them may very well need to be forensic community facilities. Southern Oregon and Lane County have the two highest rates of admission to forensics. So I just want to say that at the outset, we'd be happy to work with Southern Oregon sites, but I don't want to do it under any illusions that we won't have to have that discussion.
Follow up. Thank you. And I appreciate that comment, and I believe that Josephine County, in a lot of ways, has been very proactive in that regard for a number of facilities. And so the question I have is that we have a 16-bed or smaller site in Grants Pass. It's a polydipsia site. Do you consider those folks to be part of the state system, or how do you, or do you distinguish them differently? Because these are folks that truly are not able to. I don't believe we could put them back in the community for their own safety.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Maurer, that facility was developed especially with that particular clinical issue in mind. Those people will probably be in that facility for some time. That's, my memory is correct, and I'm almost certain of this, that that's a civil commitment population. Very few forensic patients tend to have polydipsia. Polydipsia, for those of you who don't read this literature as much as some of us do, is people who have a severe drinking disorder, not of alcohol, but of any liquid, particularly water. They will drink so much that they will upset their electrolyte balance, and it can be fatal. And I know it sounds like a very odd symptom, but there are a small number of people who have that issue. And so we developed a particularly medically oriented facility that specializes, has to be specially plumbed. If you can understand that you have to really restrict access to showers, toilets, all of those kind of things. So it's a very specialized kind of facility program.
But my question is, do you consider those patients at the state hospital?
Co-chairs, Representative Maurer, they're part of the state system, but not part of the state facilities. In other words, we fund them, we oversee them, and we regulate them, but they are not considered part of the state hospital system. They are discharged patients from the state hospital.
Okay.
Sorry,
that's
I didn't get to that point quicker.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on Representative Maurer and also your comments, Madam Chair, in relation, because, I mean, and I'm not going to debate the siting. I mean, you met the criteria, although Junction City is just barely out of Linn County. But the fact is that it's not Southern Oregon, and I'm looking at the populations of Jackson, Josephine, and also the populations of Coos, Curry, Douglas, and knowing there's no infrastructure connection there, you got to kind of come up and go into Douglas County, and just quite simply, and I realize the forensic needs as well, but I just want to make sure the conversation as we're talking about 16-bed, because originally it was east of the Cascades, but it also has to, at this point in time, include Southern Oregon as well.
Madam Co-Chairs, Senator Cruz, absolutely. We will be looking to develop several 16-bed facilities in Southern Oregon.
Just wanted to, just, I'm going to, Madam Chair, I'm going to keep on that, and you guys know I will, so.
Let's be clear about all of this. We're delighted in the interest in 16-bed facilities. Our issue has not been that we don't want to build them. Our issue has been, quite frankly, that we have had great difficulty siting them. And so we would very much like, we're encouraged by the interest and the attention that communities now have in these facilities, because we need to build more, we have a need for more. As I indicated, this isn't either or. This isn't building a 360-bed versus 20 16-bed facilities. This is about needing both. Communities have been reluctant due to some of the, it's not so much stigma about mental health, these are forensic issues.
It's a fear, and I cite an example in Gresham. I thought it was a great site, a perfect site. And boy, the city and the neighbors just had a fit, and so we were not able to site there, because you have to have that community support.
So we keep those sites, keep those locales, keep those contacts. Please coming to us.
Absolutely.
It's 10 o'clock, and I would like to know whether the committee feels that this has been vetted enough that we can then move on to the community mental health next Monday. Any further questions here?
Community mental health Monday? Oh, okay, and then Friday is...
Oh, Friday. We're meeting with...
with the people who are using in the vaulting system, right? Okay. Shannon is not here. I'm not sure if we were, if my committee was a part, if we are a part of the committee, were we?
We haven't.
Yeah. So you're having a committee meeting.
I thought it was a joint meeting with you.
Okay. We will let the committee know once we figure that out. What I need to know just quickly, this committee will not give approval for this. What you're going to do is issue certificate of participation that comes out of the revenue committee or the treasury department. You just need to make sure that there aren't really red flags coming from the legislature. Is that correct?
Chair Mona Sanderson, that's correct. Really, we will need funding to move forward. And the couple of issues that we just didn't get to were the issues around timeline, which are in tab 9 and tab 10, which was the budget projected out for the next 10 years. The issue is we need funding to be able to leave this session, to be able to do three things. We need to be able to do what's called due diligence on the two sites, be able to evaluate them even more thoroughly to be certain that there wasn't any sort of the technical kinds of issues that were missed. You can't do due diligence on every single piece of property. It's too expensive. But once you land on your sites, we need to do due diligence. We need to pay for the architectural design of the 620-bed facility. And then we need money to begin to construct it, to begin to meet our timeline, to be able to have that facility finished by 2011. Those would be done through certificates of participation. There are two bills that get passed as part of the Ways and Means and the revenue process. This will be a Ways and Means issue, but that's what we need to go forward. We by funding that, the legislature funds specific projects, and you will then in essence be funding us to build on the sites that we've indicated. That's where in essence the approval comes, and that's quite frankly we need to, if we want to move forward with this creating and transforming our system, we need to come out of this session with the ability to do just that, or we set ourselves back 2 years.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
One of the places where we're trying to build support so that we can do just what Dr. Goldberg has described, and I believe that we will. I believe we will get there, is through the Mental Health Caucus, mm-hmm. which is meeting Wednesdays, every Thursday from 8 to 9 in room 343. Representative Maurer has joined me as co-chair, along with Bob Junedep from the Oregon Advocacy Center. So I invite members seated here this morning to participate with us, and please pass the message on to our other colleagues who aren't as familiar with the issues that we're talking about, and many of whom, frankly, don't understand the high stakes involved. Yeah. We need to help our fellow colleagues get educated.
We want everybody to feel. We'd love a vote from this joint committee. There's no bill. You don't need to take a vote. This is more an issue of we're going forward together, and we need for the legislature, the executive branch, the department to feel comfortable, to be certain that we can move this forward without the kinds of political and other kinds of noise that can happen if there isn't this process. We want to be totally transparent, and we hope in the end that we get the approval of the legislature to say move forward, and not just move forward, but we're behind you and we're going to help be certain that this gets done by 2011 for the first site and 2013 for the second site, and that we get the support on the front end to build the community supports we need, and we get the support we need on the back end to get the community supports we need. We need all those pieces. We need your help. We can't do it together. And we can all do this.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Goldberg. Representative Kotek has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry if I missed it, but the timeline for the locations of the smaller forensic facilities in the south and east, timeline when we'll see a report on what you're proposing in the work group. I don't see that anywhere in the document, but maybe I'm missing it.
Madam Co-Chair, it is in the not highly detailed timelines, but in the community services work group report, which I had arranged to get delivered to you probably this morning while you were here.
Yeah.
And
just working my way through it.
Yeah, and we'd be happy to spend a little bit more time walking through that in more detail. In fact, we had thought we might have had time to get into it today, but we'd be happy to come back whenever it would be appropriate to talk about that further.
Follow up. What page is the specific timeline for the?
Timeline for. Madam Co-Chairs, I think I'm almost to it. Representative Kotek, look on page 30 of 35. And it's broken down by region. And I further split it between our best guesses at this point about how many of the beds would need to be civil versus those that would be forensic in nature. And at this point, that's about as detailed as we have. I could show you the development that we have for the rest of this biennium and which projects might begin to be developed the first part of next biennium. So that's about as far out as we've got actual projects in the pipeline.
Follow up? Thank you. That would be helpful because there is no current funding in the governor's recommended budget for these.
Madam Co-Chairs, Representative Kotek, yes, there actually is. In the governor's recommended budget, in our essential base budget, there is something we call caseload growth. And it's based on calculations that are carefully done each biennium on the projected caseloads increase in civil and criminal populations. And that money is sufficient to do the development. And if we continue to use that method of base budgeting each biennium, we anticipate that we will have the funds to do all of the what we call back-end development. The real question, I think, in terms of budgeting is do we have enough and will we make that commitment in the future for what we call front-end services? That's what most of this report that you have describes, because we've frankly done the least clear planning job and budgeting thinking about the front end services.
Follow up?
I need to adjourn the Senate piece, so I would like to adjourn the Senate Committee on Health Policy and Public Health. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Follow up is just, I understand the caseload growth, and thank you, because I didn't realize that's where it was, but the capital construction, if we're going to build anything, or? Because that's not the same thing.
Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, when we do the development for these kinds of non-state operated facilities, because the back-end community services, the 16-bed facilities, have all been non-state operated, we don't use certificates of participation to develop the facility. We have another chunk of funding that helps us develop the community facilities. And we have a community mental health housing fund. We have the Damish Housing Trust Fund. And so we're able to do those smaller development facilities without COPs.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Brian Clem.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. Some of you may or may not realize the Salem side is right in the middle of my district. It's the largest employer in my district, so that's how come I'm here today. I just wanted to, thank you for having me, but B, also, express, and some of these I've already done a little bit, interest in the issue of, group home placements and, the feeling from the city of Salem, at least, that we're fine with the big facility. We want to make sure that not all the group homes also end up in Salem, because then the families are traveling too far to see them, because they need to be proportionate to where they came from, and that's part of the plan, I know, but for myth or reality, they've felt like that's not the way it's worked out in the past, and they want to see some assurances that that's going to it's going to be better in the future. And B, the preparation for the community health system, which I know is sort of the next part, because that's the part, really, frankly, that troubles me the most, is issuing COPs, you know, or bonds or anything else that doesn't cost general fund is a lot easier politically, it seems, to build buildings than it is to spend general fund to have, you know, community systems in place. And I'm really concerned about the population growth all being assumed in the community if we haven't gotten ready. And it's going to cost real money, and I'm not sure people understand that yet. You know, people in this room do, but I'm not sure that other legislators do. And that's going to be the harder part, I believe.
Representative Clem, Chair Tomei, to both points, the last one, I think you're right. The two biggest issues are, one, the need to appropriately fund the community services, and I share your concern. The other issue, which you didn't raise around the funding issue, which you'll see in the projected budget out into 2015, is the cost for the, now back to the facilities, isn't in the building. It's actually in the staffing and the operating. And when we go from 740 beds to 960 beds, the increased costs in terms of staffing and operating those increased numbers of beds is actually very large. And so both those issues concern me, and I think we need to be, I mean, this, you get what you pay for. These are what it costs. We need to make these investments. We need to be certain we staff the hospitals appropriately, and we need to be certain we have the appropriate front-end services. And I'm glad you're raising that because we need to keep having this discussion. Now, I'm a physician. I used to deliver babies. And one of the most interesting things was always how parents focus on the delivery of the child and when they're pregnant and not on the years that follow. And no, it's true. And it's been my sense of it's the same thing about this. We're all focusing on where we put these facilities. And the bigger issues are how we run and operate them, what we have on the front end for our community systems. We've got to pay attention to that. To your first point, we're very aware and have been working with the Salem community about the issue of what's been a disproportionate placement of a lot of the community facilities in the Marion County area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've prepared some information, and we're working towards that. Bob, do you want to?
Well, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Clem, one of the things that's in your advantage, too, not only do we recognize that and are going to be developing a policy that spreads discharged people and resources more equitably than they've been historically, other communities really are stepping to the plate and want to have their share. Mm-hmm. So Central Oregon has mm-hmm. made very clear statements along that line. Eastern Oregon has said that. We're hearing that clearly from Southern Oregon, and all of that helps with the balance that you're, I think, suggesting we try to do a better job of achieving.
Madam Chair, I'll have more information about community acceptance, because tonight I'm having a town hall on this topic, and we just canvassed 1,000 houses yesterday with my interns to tell them to please come share their thoughts on the current site and rebuilding there. And then I know we have to go actually talk about staffing and public safety on the floor right here in about 15 minutes.
Right.
I'll be quiet at this point.
Thank you, Representative. Any further last questions? Thank you so much, gentlemen. All the who came today and testified, we really appreciate it. We'll be dealing with this more in the future.
Great.
And I'm closing the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness.